हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 83. Siddhanta. Akashon tan taratvari vyaparishat. Akasha refers to Paramatma because the text describes qualities of a person other than the jiva, and the word Brahman means the greatest. Akasha is Paramatma only, not the liberated jiva. Why? Because of other indications. The meaning is this. The Akasha is described as something other than the jiva in a liberated state. Artan taratvadi, since it accomplishes nirvahita, names and forms. In the state of bondage, the jiva partakes of names and forms under the control of karma. Due to his bound nature, the jiva cannot produce names and forms. And in a liberated state, the jiva gives up worldly actions and thus would not produce names and forms. So in other words, the condition, he cannot. And in the liberated, he would not. So it can't be the jiva. The scriptures say that Paramatma has the ability to create the universe. What to speak of names and forms? Anena jivenat mana nu pravishya nama rupe vya karavani. Entering with the jiva, let me separate names and forms. Chandogya Upanishad 6.3.2. Therefore, Akasha refers to Paramatma, because he's the only one that enters with the jiva. The word Adi indicates the characteristics of the word Brahman, mentioned in the quotation, expressed by its etymology, unconditional greatness. The previous description, right, because otherwise things are great, but for Krishna it's unconditional, means there's no control on his greatness. Right, a mountain is great, but it's only so big. Ocean is great, but it's only so big. Right? Does that make sense? You know, a box of Cheerios is great, but it's only, you know, so big. Right? You know, so like that. So the whole point is that he's unconditional. There's nothing controlling him. There's nothing that conditions him. Right? The previous description of the horse shaking off sin refers to the liberated jiva, but the passage says that the person attains the world of Brahman, Paramatma. Thus, the subject of the present text is Paramatma. The word Akasha, meaning all-pervading, is inapplicable for the jiva, but is well known to apply to Paramatma. Right? So just by logic and straightforward, it's there. Right? So the difficulty is that the impersonalists, they don't have a proper understanding of God or the jiva or the material energy. So since that's what Sambandha Gyan is knowing these three, and they don't have a clear picture of any of them, then we can't be surprised that they will have all kinds of difficulties, right? That they'll, you know, try to put forward the argument, this, that. Why is it like that? Because of their conditioned state. They're attached to jnana, they're attached to liberation, right? The bhakti being beyond liberation, they have no entrance into that. That's the difficulty. Right?
You can say that because the premise is incorrect, the Siddhanta is also incorrect.
Yes, the premise is incorrect, Siddhanta is incorrect, everything is incorrect. Yeah.
Yeah. When we usually say all-pervading, we mean Brahman picture.
We mean Brahman is that he's all-pervading, but at the same time Super Soul also is. Because he has that feature also. But that's why it's saying here is that the Akash aspect is talking about the Paramatma, because he has that feature of all-pervading. At the same time, he's the one that creates the names and forms. Right? So everything's based on Brahman, but it's Paramatma who's creating it.
When we say the greatest, can we say that Brahman is actually the greatest in the sense that he's the biggest manifestation?
At the same time, but at the same time, Brahman is a feature of Krishna. So Krishna is the greatest. So that's the aspect that he's pointing out what is meant by these words Brahman. Brahman meaning here Paramatma. So therefore, attaining the world of Paramatma means the transcendental realm.
Creates a names and forms, so it refers to the Karana Daksha Vishnu aspect.
Karana Daksha, Kira Daksha, Garbha Daksha means they're all Paramatma. Okay. It's just Paramatma of which aspect. So you're going to have the names and forms that are in the primary creation created by Mahavishnu, but then you're going to have the secondary that's there also, because that secondary, that Virat, is coming from Garbhadakshay Vishnu. But it's being pervaded by Kiradakshay Vishnu, that's why it works. Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. The Chandogya Upanishad states that names and forms evolve from Akasha. This Akash is the Supreme Lord Himself, not the Jiva, who is subject to names and forms in His conditioned state, and who is released from them in His liberated state. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16.21. The words and mind of the conditioned soul cannot approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for material names and forms are not applicable to the Lord. Anama Rupas, who is entirely spiritual, beyond the conception of gross and subtle forms. The impersonal Brahman is another of His forms. May He, by His pleasure, protect us. Footnote 49. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, in this verse, King Chitraketu offers respect to the impersonal feature of the Lord. Sardartha Darshini 6.16.21. Right, so he's offering a basic respect to that feature of the Lord, but he's offering that respect to the Lord who has that feature. Right? So you always have to remember these aspects. So the impersonal aspect is a feature of the Lord, but that's not of interest to the devotees, right? Because it's only existence, right? It's not more than that. So existence doesn't have any importance, right, other than the pleasure of the Lord, right? So activities produce results, but that's only for the pleasure of the Lord. Those names, forms, and activities exist. So the existence is simply so that there can be action, so that results can then be there for the pleasure of the Lord. But it's not about the result itself, it's about the bhakti. Right? This is a very fine point that, how do you say? Technically, in this spiritual world, we don't make a distinction, because all of these things are simply being done to please Krishna. So we just say they're absorbed in pure devotion. They act in pure devotion. And so under the Icha, Kriya, and Jnana Shaktis, all these different things go on. The Samvit, Sandini, Hladini, the pleasure the Lord is getting by the activities that are there, you know, because of their particular relationship. Right? But here in the material world, because we're making a distinction between the Lord and His creation, and the Lord is the enjoyer and herself is the enjoyer. So then the problem comes up is that the names and forms we're going to use, which is not a problem. That's what they do in the spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, it's because of their love. Therefore, they work with particular names and forms. Here, We could also say it's because of our love for ourselves, therefore we work with particular names and forms. So just like we fully surrendered unto ourselves, but unfortunately in fully surrendering to ourselves, we're not protecting ourselves from all sinful reactions. So it doesn't work out quite as good as if you apply it to Krishna. Right? So we're engaging jnana and karma in the Lord's service, but it's not that karma and jnana are service. They're things to use in the Lord's service, just like pots and pans aren't cooking, right? But they are used for cooking. Does that make sense? Like that. The car is not driving. It's you engaged in the process of driving. Yes?
And then can we say that in the spiritual world, jnana and kriya, they assist each other.
Yes.
Is the main, and then everything follows.
Yes. That's exactly the point. If you can make, if once one makes that distinction, then it makes it very easy to apply these facets of the philosophy into our life. So in other words, it's Krishna's desire, then kriya and jnana are fulfilling that. But what happens is we replace Krishna's desire with our desire. So therefore, that's why we're only interested in names and forms, not interested in the primary. Because kriya and jnana are actually secondary. They're only for supporting the primary, which is Krishna's desire. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point that's going on, is that we've turned our attention from Krishna onto the kriya and jnana aspects. That these activities and this existence will give me pleasure. So now we have to turn our attention back to Krishna. What are we doing? We're doing like they do in the spiritual world. We engage the jnana and kriya aspects in the Lord's service. But in the conditioned state, there's a slight difference. For them, it's only in support of. So technically, they're only dealing with bhakti. But for us, we're dealing with karma and jnana. But we've connected it to Krishna, right? So in other words, if your goal is Krishna, pleasing Krishna in bhakti, then this part will apply. That we're engaging karma, we're engaging jnana for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. So it's called jnana yoga karma yoga or jnana yoga. So in that process, we're advancing because of the bhakti element. And at the same time, bhakti gives the effect of that karma that you've done and the effect of the jnana that you're using. But the point is once that's given, then bhakti's not part of it. Do you understand? Let us say I work to, I work to cook something. Okay? So I cooked that item. So it's through bhakti that I'm actually able to be successful in my karma. Right? Because the Shastra says without bhakti, karma and jnana aren't successful. So at least a little bit. But now for us, that bhakti is to please Krishna. Not just bhakti, is that devotion to that form of Krishna as cooking. Right? So, like a chef might be. Right, so there's some bhakti. Then now, once we get that, now we have the cook preparation. It's not that now it's given that. That's the result of karma. So now bhakti leaves that. Now what do you have to do? Right, you have to offer it to Krishna. Right, does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Is that this is where the mistake comes in the conditioned living entity when he's performing karma yoga and jnana yoga. He thinks because he's done it in connection with Krishna that automatically it's all Krishna. So he doesn't have to think anymore about it. But that's why one's conscious all the time, because then at every moment the result that's coming from that karma at every moment, you're seeing that connection to Krishna. So therefore, it's bhakti. Right? So in the spiritual world, they never see anything different than Krishna's desire. So there's no distraction by Vijnana and Kriya Shaktis. They only see them in connection, therefore it's fully spiritual. But as soon as you see the Vijnana and Kriya separate from the Lord, that's material. Not that these potencies are material, it's just our vision of it's material, and the results that we gain from them will be material. Does that make sense? So that's a fine point. Otherwise, that's why it's you're doing something and it's starting off with that element of devotion, then we get focused on the Jnana Kriya aspects. But then it sometimes things start going off the rails, people are getting upset, things aren't working out, we're getting disturbed. Why? Because we're not remembering Krishna. So we've gotten the result, but we're not remembering Krishna's connection to it. Now, something reminds us of it, then immediately it's back on track. You know, we'll be standing there in front of the deity, who are this, that, then we remember, and then everything works out. Because then we introduce Krishna again. So it's just like, it's plugged in, it's working. As soon as you're just looking at the machine and not worried about if it's plugged in or not, it's not plugged. Yes?
But then, in the spiritual world, Sambandha Dide and Prayojana, it's all one process.
It's all one thing, you don't make the distinction.
But for us, it seems that in the beginning, the Prayojana is the more, it's a drive.
Yes.
Then we have to install Sambandha.
Yes.
And then we have to follow Abhideya.
Yes.
So this would be a natural progression.
Yes, yes. Like that. So it's because of the results, but for that result to actually be attractive, there has to be some aspect of Sambandha is there. So in other words, we're looking at the Sambandha aspect of result. But it becomes something important when we understand. In other words, you have the right attitude, you can appreciate that result for Krishna. Then the knowledge that's required for getting that result, and then after that, the knowledge for the activity itself. Then having all four aspects of Sambandha, then you can perform Abhideya, get the result in Prayojana. So that's how Prabhupada introduces it in the introduction to Gita. The right attitude is there, then you can actually appreciate and be inspired, as you're mentioning, by the result. Because if you don't have the right attitude, you're not inspired. You know, the kid wants to be out with his friends playing so that he should do his homework, because then he can get his medical degree and then he can, you know, make $2 million a year. That's not inspiring to him because he's not identifying as a student. He's identifying as a friend of a, you know, as one of his friends. So as soon as that attitude is right, then you can appreciate it. Then you want to know about the knowledge. Okay, then how do I do this? Right. So like you're saying, is that without getting to Prayojana, then we don't actually take the Sambandha very seriously, and therefore we never get to Abhideya. So the mind, then it touches on that Sambandha, then touches on Prayojana. Then it comes back seriously into Sambandha, then it goes into Abhideya Prayojana.
I'm just trying to clarify that on the preliminary stages of Bhakti Yoga, we deal within Sambandha, and then Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, within Sambandha Gyan.
Yes. We perform. It's just like we know what we're supposed to be doing. Then we do it. Like let's say we're hearing about the glories of the holy name and how one develops love for Krishna and all these different things. So we can say that's Prayojana, but it's actually the Prayojana within Sambandha. Then hearing that, we're inspired now. We know the knowledge. We know how to do it. Now we'll go sit down and chant nicely. Right, and then from chanting, we'll get that taste, we'll get that result, that attraction to Krishna, all those things will come. Does that make sense? So in other words, Sambandha includes the knowledge of the other two. All the breakdown that's there, you know, the Chaturvyuha, the knowledge of those four, that's Sambandha Gyan. Applying it, that's Abhideya. Getting the result and that experience, that's Prayojana. But when your focus, you can say, is to get someone started, you have to, you know, once the proper attitude is there, by, okay, we're not the body, we're the soul, we're servant of Krishna. That puts us into the proper attitude of service. Then when we give the results, then we're attracted. Right? Because unless there's desire, there can't be attraction. Right? So if the attitude's right, then contemplating that attitude, that will give us that attachment. Then once we're attached, we're willing to work very hard. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that we're doing the same thing on the material platform. Right? But we have to apply that into the spiritual. But the difference is we have to change the attitude, because I'm doing it because it's good for me. I'm the controller and enjoyer, so this situation or this result will make me that, so I want to know how do I get that. Right? So we have to I'm servant of Krishna, this will get nice things for Krishna, Krishna likes these things, so let me do them for Krishna. Right? So therefore the Icha is the main thing. But what's in means in the Icha Shakti, what expands from Icha Shakti is the Lord, the devotees, the Dham, their pastimes, all those things expand from there. Now in one sense we'll say, you know, well, that's complete. Yes, it is. Then we'll say Kriya Shakti then manifests, you know, all the different places and all that, the spiritual world is expanded from there. And it's kind of like, but didn't it just say the Dham is there? Then we say the Jnana Shakti coming from Kriya, that's the support, that everything's based on that, that's all the different things that's open. Isn't that? Because for us, we start from existence and go back. But Krishna already exists, so you don't have, he and his associates don't have to start from there. Right? So they're starting Krishna's desire, then these other things support. That's the meaning of Sarvadharmam Parityaja. You start with Krishna's desire, then come back into Kriya and Jnana. But we're starting the other way. We're trying to engage religion in the Lord's service. So therefore we're starting with what is the knowledge, what is the process, what's the result, like this, and we're moving forward like that. Right? So that's the difference between the sadhana and that full surrender. Does that make sense? It's just which way you approach it. The activities don't change, you know, unless it's necessary. But otherwise, the activities don't change. So in the spiritual world, they don't make a distinction between sandini, ladini, and samvit potencies. You know, it's not you're going, well, Radharani is ladini, and then, you know, this devotee is, you know, here, Yogamaya is this one, and that one's that. You don't make that. And then within ladini, this one's that. You don't do that. There, it's just everybody's personal, natural relationship. It's only here we make the distinction, because otherwise we are using all three areas for ourselves. So we have to break it down and show how, one, they're not for ourselves, they're for Krishna, and then how to separate us doing it for ourselves in connection with Krishna. I mean, us doing it for ourselves, and us doing it for ourselves connected to Krishna, and then us doing it for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's, yeah.
There was a discussion after the previous class on Friday that you mentioned, and we discussed the jiva is Sachidananda. So is it, you know, 33%, 33%, 33%? Because there was an idea that ananda is very much, it's not, it's out of proportion. Means it's less than sat and chit. Ananda is much lesser than those.
I mean, sat is your eternal. Chit, you have the, you know, knowledge of your what you require in performing your service to Krishna and everything like that. Ananda goes on unlimitedly expanding. Right? It means our existence doesn't go on expanding, it's just we exist. Yeah. But the ananda goes on. Because the point is whatever the proportion, it doesn't matter, because when we connect to Krishna, Krishna is unlimited. So the ananda is unlimited.
So we can't apply material logic to both.
No, that's the whole point. It's just enough logic is used to get a concept so that we understand what we're dealing with. but not enough that we actually, you know, drive ourselves nuts because of our natural tendency to do so.
The example of a certain Brahman who was being appreciated by Lord Chaitanya. So he was reciting Bhagavad Gita, and so basically he was trying to satisfy Krishna, so the Ichha Shakti. But then when, at the same time, he was not good at Kriya and Jnana Shakti because the other Brahmanas are laughing at his sense.
No, but what is Kriya and what is Jnana?
Here in this case, like in this person's case, he was not able to recite the shlokas.
He was not able to recite the shlokas, but we call that, that's what we're meaning by the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis. The gopis, when they go out for the rasa dance, they can't dress properly. You understand? So that's the thing, is we're thinking that it's the perfection of the activity. That's what we mean by it's not that. Let's take what we were discussing before to the next stage. We're doing the activity. The activity will be gained from that, whatever we're doing. But now we have the opportunity to engage that. But it's not that it's, I've managed something, I've arranged something. But what I've arranged, that's coming by the rules of karma. By Krishna's grace, of course. And the reason it's coming so quickly and nicely is because of the devotion. Because karma is not going to work without bhakti. So someone who's a devotee, naturally their bhakti is greater. Therefore, then, the process of karma works so much better for devotees than it will even for the karmis. We may think it's not this and that, but at the same time, is it? You know what I'm saying? You know, so, I mean, devotees just do so many things, we take it for granted because it actually comes so easy because of the bhakti. Right? But it's not that what we've done technically is the bhakti. That's just coming from the karma. Right? But it's that we're doing it to please Krishna, that's the bhakti. So if there's mixed devotional service, we're getting the results of the karma of the activity we're performing. And at the same time, we're getting the results of the bhakti from what we're performing. Now, the karma is coming because of the bhakti. But having gained that result, now what are you going to do with it? Because now it's not being operated. Now it just is existing. The results of my management exist. Now what are you going to do with it? Right? Then it has to be engaged in Krishna's service. Otherwise, then people say, oh, wow, that was so fabulous. Yeah, it wasn't that great. You know what I'm saying? So then it gets lost. So we get distracted by karma yoga and jnana yoga. That's why the point when it says free from karma and jnana, it means that. So anything that you can gain by an activity, that's gained through karma. Now, jnana, that comes very straight. But now, jnana, it gives moksha. The result of jnana is moksha, right? So, the devotee is liberated because of the knowledge. But just because he's liberated, that doesn't mean that you're situated in prema. You have to actually endeavor in bhakti, continue with that, to attain prema. Right? So, that means mukti is simply a situation. Right? Because that's all they're interested in anyway, is a situation. It's not like the cows and the guru. So, that means then, being in the Brahman, that's a situation. Being on the same planet of the Lord is a situation. Having the same form as the Lord, the same opulence as the Lord, of being associated, it's a situation. What are you going to do with that? That's the bhakti. So by the performance of the Vedic knowledge, that will, in connection with bhakti, that will give you the liberation. But it's what you're going to do with it, that's the bhakti. Does that make sense? That's why we're not interested in liberation. So even the, you know, Salokya, Samipya, Sarshti, and Swarupya, we're not interested in. Because they're actually a result of jnana. I mean, it's only when that jnana is connected with bhakti then you can get that. But the point is just being in that situation, is that, some may argue, no, but then all you're saying, all the people in Vaikuntha, that they're, it's only on the platform of God. No, it's bhakti, because they're using it. It's that they're using their form, their position of association, the position on the planet or the opulent, to please the Lord at every moment. That's bhakti. But the point is getting liberation, that's just the result of jnana. Does that make sense? Just like facility is the result of karma. So that's the point. We have facility and we have situation. So in the situation with that particular facility, what activities can be performed to get what result to use for Krishna? You understand? That's what we're trying to do. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, by looking at it this way, karma and jnana don't have as much importance as we would normally attribute to them. That's why the devotees aren't interested. So when they're saying they're not interested, we take it, oh, they do no activity. Because for us, it's material is activity, spiritual means no activity. Or if you're not interested, we don't do it. Right? Like, you know, hey, we got something here to eat. Are you interested? You know, you want to eat? No, I'm not interested. You know, I'm not hungry. Or I don't eat that. Or, you know what I'm saying? So if there's interest, we do. No interest, we don't do. So here it's actually a higher position, is that they don't see. You understand? So that's why the devotees aren't worried about being freed from karma. They're worried about the effect of karma, which is not being Krishna conscious. So when Krishna's saying being freed from all reactions of sin, that doesn't mean that they're worried, they're happy, okay, now I won't get hit by a bus. They're happy that now that previous karma is not going to have an effect on my consciousness, so it's not going to make me not Krishna conscious. You understand? So for the pure devotees, it's just serving and pleasing Krishna is all that matters. Right? So they're not trying to become freed from sin. Because if they're absorbed in Krishna, where's the sin? Because we're absorbed in sin, we're trying to become freed from sin so that we can remember Krishna. So that's part of the process. But we have to understand that at some point that it's not about the things that we're using in the process, it's about the bhakti itself. That's why bhakti is the position, that's the natural nature of the living entity. Bhakti is the natural activity. Bhakti is the natural, attachment or results. So that's why it's in all positions, because that's the element that's there. So it's not that Mother Yashoda is attached to that big fancy house she has. I think it's got 100 rooms in it, from what I remember. Mother Yashoda's house has 100 rooms. Right? So now, it's not she's attached to that, she's attached to the service. And this house is the perfect place that she can render all the varieties of service she does. But it's not about the house. Well, for us, it's about the house, but we're using it for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difference. So, yes.
For those who don't have idea about the personal aspect of Lord, then for them the bhakti is like surrendering to the rules and the mechanics of the...
Yes, but because Krishna is the rules, he's given the rules. Like he says, I am the sacrifice. He is the mantra. He's the ghee. He's the offering. He's the person offering it. He's the yajaman who is being offered on behalf of. He's the result. So he being all these things, that you're surrendered in any way, Krishna being pleased, you get the results. That's the whole point. Let us say, okay, I get a result. Okay? I perform an activity, I get a result. Now, of getting a result, now let's say I get the result, but I'm not sad, I'm not peaceful. Am I actually happy with that result? No. So it's the peacefulness that I actually like from getting that. Where does the peace come from? Right? That comes from Krishna. When Krishna is satisfied by your application of the rules and regulations in the process of karma or jnana, he gives that peacefulness. But because then we have another desire, then the peacefulness goes, and then we have to make that endeavor again. So that means you follow Shastra, then naturally you get peaceful. But if you don't, you don't. That's why we say the modern civilization, no one is peaceful. Because they're not doing anything to please Krishna. And even if they are, you know, doing things according to Shastra, but they're not ultimately peaceful because they have unlimited desires that they're constantly trying to fulfill. Even though from that one they might get some peacefulness, but the next one's automatically there. So it's all, the person who's actually peaceful is the devotee. Because he has no desires other than to please Krishna. So it's just these fine things. Otherwise, we take it for granted that I have this knowledge, I'm doing this activity, so automatically it's devotional. It can be automatically devotional if always we're conscious of Krishna and the result is always for Krishna. But if we forget Krishna and that, then it might not be. Right? But being rightly situated and the reason we're doing it is devotional. So like if you're managing a temple, generally speaking, that would be connected to Krishna. Right? So even if you forget, it's going to be much more easy to remember. Right? Because the deities are there, all the activities are there, and that, you know, so it's that becomes there. But so it becomes a very, you know, good found position or situation in which to be. Right? So, okay. Little louder.
Somebody said the mind goes to some Vanda Prayojan, then comes back and goes to some Vanda Abhideya.
Yeah, in other words, we're going Sambandha Prayojana Abhideya.
Yes.
You understand in the practical? Because unless we see the results, we're not going to act. But in logic, like when we're dealing with Vedanta Sutra, why it's so different, it took us a while to get used to it, it only goes Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. It doesn't give us that carrot first and then explain it. It just goes through, this is the sambandha, right? And now we've been in the sambandha section another adhyaya, right? You know, we haven't finished this one and then the next one, don't we?
Yeah.
No, it's not a matter of that. It's a matter of you're always functioning with the sambandha jnana. Because if you're performing the activity, you don't know what the result is. How do you know that you're doing the right activity? You know what I'm saying? If you don't know that where the temple is, how do you know that by walking you're getting closer to the temple? Right? So that means you have to have the knowledge of what the goal is. Right? And then if we don't know that the process is walking, then we might be sitting here and say, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to the temple. Right? So therefore, we have to know what the Abhideya is. Then we have to know who we are, you know, means because we're connected to the feet, and the feet walk on the ground. You know, if we're trying to walk up the walls, we won't get very far. Right? That's why it's always said, you know, the person's not walking up the wall, he's climbing the walls, not walking the walls. You understand? Because walking just doesn't work. No, getting to the temple would be your prayojana. Then you, the temple, walk, you know, the process of walking and the road on which you walk, that would be your sambandha, and that you're going to walk on that road in this way, that would be your abhideya. Then if you apply all that, then you get together, then that will be prayojana, you'll attain the temple. You understand? But having attained it, now what will you do? Yeah. So now it's a matter of, what, are you going to take darshan, or are you going to sit out on the steps and do Facebook? Now look at the size of those steps. You know how many people? Hundreds of people could sit out there. In fact, they'll probably have to have guards to make sure people don't sit out there. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16.23. The Supreme Brahman emanates from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and expands like the sky, Vyomata. Although untouched by anything material, it exists within and without. Nevertheless, the mind, intelligence, senses, and living force can neither touch him nor know him. I offer unto him my respectful obeisances, right? So only through bhakti can you know him. That's the important point. That's why these discussions come up, because without bhakti, they're trying to understand the Lord. And so that's why they can't see that it's the Lord. They can only see themselves, because that's all they're interested in. They want to become Brahman. They can't understand actually what is Brahman and what is the material world, who they are, because they don't want to. They just want to be Brahman. So they're in illusion. They're not going to be able to see this. Yes.
Is that because there is no connection between material senses and spiritual reality, the Lord?
Yes, because material means we're only seeing the sambandha abhideya. We're not actually seeing the prayojana.
That's material.
Means I see, here's this place. And by doing particular activities with this place, I can get happiness out of it. So the happiness is taken for granted. That's, of course, the natural position. But in what situation I can do what to make myself happy? That's what's looked for. You know what I'm saying? So that's material. When we stop doing that, so basically we're taking, how can I engage Krishna's energy for my satisfaction? That's material. How can I engage Krishna's energy for his satisfaction? That's spiritual.
And if we add to this, so I can be satisfied? Mixed?
Yeah, it would be a mix, because you're naturally going to be satisfied, right? Because by having that knowledge that you'll be satisfied by this process, so you focus on that process, then with that knowledge, performing the process, then you'll be liberated. The liberated position means you're satisfied. Right? But the point is, are you going to be satisfied to be satisfied? Because the residents of the spiritual world, they go beyond that satisfaction. But, in other words, it's not a problem, because it will get you to the position where then you can see what's beyond that. Right? So just like, let us say, in here, by jnan, by karma, I perform the activity thinking when I get that, that'll be perfection. But once I get it, then I can see that now what? Right? So now, use it for Krishna. So in the same way is that I'm satisfied or I'm on the liberated platform. That I'll, by the process of using knowledge and devotion, I'll get to that platform. But once I get to that platform, then it'll be the same thing. Now what? Right? Now we engage in Krishna's service. Right? So since we're doing that all the way along, that'll be very easy. It's a problem for the impersonalists, because they're never really doing bhakti. They're doing, but it's bhakti leaves as soon as they get their liberation. But for the devotee, then, because the mood of devotion is still there, bhakti never leaves. You understand? Right? So wherever that sense of devotion is, that's where bhakti is. But the aspect of the karma and jnana, once that's accomplished, bhakti leaves that, unless your consciousness is such that it's on devotion. Then it remains, because the bhakti is continuing. But if you're doing something just to get a result, and once you get it, you stop, then the bhakti is left. You understand? So therefore, bhakti is independent. See, bhakti is independent. It's not dependent on karma or jnana. We'll say, oh no, but if we do this, then everything will be great. No, it means it'll be a nicer situation. But it's still the bhakti that counts. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, let us say, okay, early days in Russia, okay, somebody's house, a program is happening, and there's 80 people in this house, okay? Now, in those days, 80 people in that house means, is anybody sitting? Right? Only the person giving the class. Like that. Only because they're a special guest. Otherwise, everybody be standing, right? Right? So, now are we going to say that in that situation, people weren't hearing very well, weren't absorbed very well, the quality of bhakti was not very great, because the facility there was not so good. But now we've worked very hard. We have this nice big temple, you know, lights, you know, nice designs and everything like that. Now the bhakti, now it can, now it'll be good, because bhakti comes from karma, right? You understand? That's the way we have to. That's why it said bhakti is independent. It doesn't depend upon that. So whether you're in that person's house, whether you're in the temple, you can have the same level of bhakti. Right. So, but so to think that no, the karma is the bhakti. It's not the bhakti. The karma is what's used in the bhakti, right? So in the spiritual platform, that's what we're calling the kriya. Right? On the material platform, we don't generally use it. We would say that's passion and ignorance. Right? Well, does that make sense? Because the situation here, the existence of things, is in ignorance. The reason that there's any activity is because of the passion of wanting to result. Now, you're only going to get those results if there's the aspect of goodness. You're following the rules. So that's, we're trying to distinguish bhakti as separate. But it's all Krishna's arrangement, so it's all one thing, but you have to know what's what. You know, it's one kitchen, but you have to be able to tell the difference between a knife, you know, and a frying pan. Right? That makes sense. Okay. Sutra 1342. Shushup yud kran tyor bedhana. Akasha, sky, artha, meaning.
This is what to what translation of the previous sutra.
This is?
What to what translation of the previous sutra.
How is it the same?
Somewhat.
You mean the word for word is from the previous, not the translation?
Not the translation.
Okay. 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 The jiva is not Brahman because of descriptions showing that the jiva differs from the Lord while in deep sleep and while leaving the body. Sutra Prakashika. Some commentators like Shankara and Vallabha take the final two sutras of this pada, 42 and 43, to form a new adhikarana. Srila Madhvacharya takes the final three sutras, 41, 42, and 42. He really likes 42. I think that's supposed to be 43. As forming three separate adhikaranas. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, however, follows Ramanuja and Nimbarka and groups all three sutras as one adhikarana. It's just a matter of how much you want to bring out a different thing, or whether you want to show it as a stepping on. Because it's like, I'm explaining something. In that explanation, I can be making a full philosophical point, simply as an example. Right? So now, if I want to give emphasis to that point, I can make that as its own adhikarana. Right, because in making the point, I'll go through all the five stages. Or you can do it here, as that's just part of the examples and explanations, or some aspect of a bigger adhikarana.
Can you say that the explanation that is being given by Madhvacharya, because he's saying that every sutra is one adhikarana, so it's a detailed explanation than what
the not necessarily. It's more detailed. It's just that. He wants to emphasize that, so he's bringing it out. Because generally anything to do with the jiva is not Brahman. So what's the emphasis just in that part? Because the description is showing that the jiva differs. The jiva is not Brahman. The jiva differs. So if we wanted to emphasize those two points, what philosophy are we discussing? Dvaita. So naturally, anything that's going to show separate, he wants to put emphasis on. So it's not a problem. It's not necessary that there's more detail, so therefore we have to read his to get the full detail.
Because the examples that he used earlier in the earlier fathers, you know, about the difference between the jiva and the brahman, they're also there, you know, like this is another viewpoint where it is deep sleep and leaving the body.
Yes, but why does it have to be another adhikarana? Yes, but he said Baladeva Vibhushan put 41, 42, and 43 in what adhikarana? You understand? So my point is it's not, it's more detailed than Madhvacharya's, right? It's that he just breaks it up so that there's that, that he wants to make sure, emphasize those points. You know, it's just like, let us say, no, you should do your homework now. Or, no, you're going to do your homework now. Okay, so is there more detail? No, it's emphasis. you understand? So it's just a matter of emphasis. That's all. So, yeah, you should be careful of that, that, oh, there's something in Madhvacharya's that we're missing out on, and yeah, you have to... Yes.
If we're talking about this Dvaita, Nimbarka's philosophy is Dvaita Advaita.
Yes.
And our Veda Abheda.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
It's one or the other. You can look at it this way, or you can look at it that way. Ours is, it's simultaneously, inconceivably simultaneously one and different. Means at the same time. That's why for our presentation it's more difficult to catch. Because we're talking about something that's different being the same, and something the same as being different. You understand? So that's the thing, is that others won't do that. They're talking about difference, they're just talking difference. They're talking about the same, they're just talking same. Does that make sense? So in that way, the other four are actually simpler. Like that. They may give very a lot of detail, but it's actually, the approach is much more simple. Because ours is, it's happening simultaneously. That's why we can be talking about one thing and relating it to another. That's why we don't make as necessarily have to make as much distinction. Like, means they're worshipping Vishnu, right? But at all the Das avatars and all the major avatars, like are mentioned in the Puranas and the Bhagavatam, those lists, they have a big festival every day, all those days. While we don't. Because if you're worshipping Krishna, then all the other forms are included. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. So it appears, oh, ours is simpler and everything. Actually, theirs is simpler. It may be repeated so many times, but it's actually simpler. Is that what it is? Shankara and his ilk object that the jiva is nothing but Paramatma, owing to many passages teaching their unity and condemning their duality. Therefore, they hold the Akasha may be the jiva in its liberated condition. The present sutra applies, no, for the jiva and Brahman are spoken of as being distinctly different from each other in the condition of deep sleep, in the departure from the body. Even in the state of release, the jiva can never be non-different from Brahman. In both the time of dreamless sleep and the time of the jiva's liberation from the material world, the jiva and the supreme Brahman are different. Right? You can't be separated, but at the same time they're different. Sri Govinda Bhashya. Right? Because otherwise, if they're separated, that means they're not Brahman. So if everything's Brahman, that means the illusion that the jiva is separate, then Brahman is also Brahman. And the material world, which is an illusion, is also Brahman. But they'll say it's not Brahman. So the material world and the jiva are not Brahman. So then what are they? So then what's their philosophy? If everything's Brahman, then, you know, it's limited Brahman. You know, so, yeah. Shugovindabhasya, Purvapaksha. Let that be. But it is not proper to say, right, because we already have the Vishaya from before. Yeah. We're just continuing. So, having answered that question, now they come up with another doubt on the same point. That's why we keep it as one, Adhikarma. Mm-hmm. So it's the same Vishaya. But now they're just coming from a different angle. So that's the point. When you're in the Udaharana, then you may have many, many doubts come up, and you'll deal and get rid of all those doubts. Then you're going to, in the, Udaharana?
Upanayana.
And then Upanayana, then you're going to bring all those points together and show how that supports, then, the conclusion.
Nirnaya.
Yes. Does that make sense? So whether there's no doubt, one doubt, many doubts, it's still going to be the same process. Right? Okay, Purvapaksha, let that be. But it is not proper to say that Brahman refers to something other than the liberated jiva, since that is impossible to tolerate. Right? But the problem is they're supposed to be, you know, on the liberated platform and be transcendental, so they don't have a problem tolerating. The jiva in a state of bondage is described in the following. Katama atmeti yoyam vijnana mayaf praneshu hridyantar jyoti purusha. Purusha samanas san nubhav lokav anu sam charati. Who is the atma, Yajnavalkya said? The person who is full of knowledge, who is internal light in the heart within the pranas, remaining the same, wanders in the two worlds.
Is this still there, Purvapaksha?
Yeah. No, this is all there, Purvapaksha. Yeah. Like that. I mean, the Siddhanta comes the next page. So they're giving a much more elaborate explanation this time. Right, because it didn't work last time, so now they're really trying to go for it. Okay. But later the jiva is described as Brahman. Sava ayam atma brahma vijnana maya. This jiva is Brahman, full of knowledge. Right? So they're saying here, who is full of knowledge? Right? So they're saying the jiva is Brahman. So they're saying if this is connected with the living entity. But later it says that he's Brahman, so therefore then anything connected with Brahman is about the living entity. That's their logic that they're using. So. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.5. Elsewhere, the jiva's liberated state is described as ata kam yamana, devoid of desire. And then the jiva is described as Brahman. Brahmaiva san Brahma Pieti. Becoming Brahman, jiva attains Brahman. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.6. At the end, in describing the result, it is said, Abhayam vai Brahma Bhavati ya eva Veda. Whoever knows this becomes fearless Brahman. Right? So, in other words, once one understands that one's the soul, not the body, and one gives up that endeavor for things connected with the body, right, and just connected with transcendence, at that point then you can say he understands he's Brahman, he becomes Brahman. Point is, the jiva is already Brahman, but the point is you can't take advantage of it. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So it's only when the consciousness develops you can take advantage. Like the child, it's not that they're not, you know, the son of the extremely wealthy person, but technically they're wealthy, but at the same time, can they take advantage of it? No. So it's a matter of consciousness. So once they develop the conscious, when the conscious develops, then you understand that you're transcendental. Then you'll say, the jiva is now transcendental. But the jiva always was transcendental, but he identifies that he's not, so therefore he's dealt with as he's not. Right? The gold ring that's been dropped in the mud is a gold ring, right? That's why we pick it back up out of the mud. If we had a piece of mud in our hand and it fell out of our hand into the mud, would we care? No. So we pick it up because it's gold. But at the same time, is how do we deal with it? Just as a gold ring, that's it? Is there any consideration of the mud? Right? Yes. So therefore we wash off the mud. Then we'll say, now it's situated properly as a gold ring. But it always was the gold ring, even with the mud. But the problem is the mud becomes the prominent teacher. Right? So. Though sometimes distinctions are made between jiva and Brahman, that distinction is like the distinction between air in a pot and air in the sky, created by upadi. Right? So, whenever it does, that we'll say, no, yeah, no, it describes like that, but it's like this. So they have their explanations. They'll always try to say it's all one, and when they can't prove it's all one, then they'll use this. The air in the pot, you know, the air in the sky. But the point is that air in the pot, that volume of sky, is still that volume. It's not that volume, what's there, fills up everything. Because if that was the case, okay, we have this big room here. This is your process. Get a big room like this that's airtight. Fill it up with Maya bodies. Bring in one pot of air. Suck out all the air in the room and say, now I'm going to break this one pot. And because now the air in the pot is broken, it will merge into the greater sky. Now the whole room will just be air. Right? And then see how well they do. Right? Probably not as well as they philosophically, you know, in the comfort of their, you know, on their asana that they're able to propound this. They probably would be a little less comfortable. Right? So. When the upadi is destroyed, the limited jiva becomes great, Brahman, just as when the pot is destroyed. The point is the pot's still a pot. Now it's a broken pot, but it's still a pot. The air is the air, the sky is the sky, the pot's the pot. So they're trying to say it all becomes one. But now what happens to the pot? Did the pot, by breaking, become part of the sky? Because if the jiva's illusion and becomes Brahman, why doesn't the illusion itself become Brahman? On the liberation of the jiva. So we don't hear them talking about the pot merging into Akash. Right? It just sits there on the ground in pieces. Right? And then they have to bring an illusory broom to sweep it up. Right? So, yeah. Okay, then the air in the pot merges with the air in the sky. Because the jiva can attain powers to create universes, Brahma does not refer to something other than jiva, right? He has the power to create universes. You know, it means Brahma does a creation within the universe, but he hasn't created the universe itself and the ingredients. He just puts them together. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. But, so they're just trying to see, he can create, so therefore it must be here. Because you're saying that's the other thing, is theirs. He's the creator. But see, he does so like this. So they're very smug about their answer and then feel very good about themselves that, yes, see, I am God. Because if any doubt you bring up, then they're not God, so they're going to be in anxiety. And so because of that, they're going to get angry. And hence, not tolerant. Right? Yeah. Siddhanta. To this Purvapaksha argument, the next sutra responds, Shushupt yud krant yor bhede nam. The jiva is not Brahman because of descriptions showing that the jiva differs from the Lord while in deep sleep and while leaving the body. The word vyapadeshat, because of descriptions, from the last verse should be understood here also. It is not possible that the liberated jiva can be Brahman in these statements, right? Because otherwise, if it's a complete statement in itself, then it would have all the definitions within it, right? But because it's part of a bigger adhikarana, it doesn't have those definitions itself. Those are based on the previous verse. Does that make sense? So it's just a continuation of that. Right? It's not like you know, how you say, you know, I want you to get all this work done before, you know, this time. You know, so I want you, you know, to clean the room, you know, do this and that. So you're just taking, oh, they said, you know, go to the market, you know. And so all the other things you don't do because all they said was go to the market. They're all connected. Does that make sense? Why? Because Brahman is described, Vyaparishat, as different, Bedena, from the Jiva, either when he is in deep sleep or going out of the body at death. Shushup yutkrantyaho. Concerning the state of sleep, it is said, Pragyenatmana, sam parish vakto na bhayam kinchana beda nantaram. The Jiva, embraced by the omniscient Atma, Brahman, does not know anything outside or inside. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.3.21. Concerning his going out of the body, it is said, Pragyenatmana anvarudha utsarjan yati. Mounted upon the omniscient Atma, the Jiva goes out of the body while groaning. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.3.35. Utsarjan means groaning. It is impossible that the Jiva, with meager knowledge, when sleeping or going out of the body, could be embraced or ride upon itself. Right? He's embracing himself. So what's the whole point? You know, why would you embrace yourself? Or why would you ride out on yourself? You understand? So that's impossible. So, therefore, he's embraced by the Lord. He's riding out, you know, with the Lord. Nor can the other person be another jiva, since no jiva is omniscient, pragyatma, as described in the text. Right? They only know their own situation. They don't know everything. You can say, no, but once you're liberated. But the whole point is then you're saying that a liberated jiva would come and take one out. But the point is a liberated jiva is just Brahman. There would be no jiva, since their concept is a jiva is only there due to illusion. So technically you couldn't have a liberated jiva as your answer, because they don't exist, right? Because conditioned jivas don't exist, liberated jivas don't exist, the material energy doesn't exist according to the impersonal philosophy, right? Maya bodies will say that. So you couldn't, they said, no, but this is the liberated jiva, because it can't, then how does it have definition, according to them? We can give definition to Brahman because he has all qualities. Right? That's the point. We just say he's unlimited. We only give him one quality. Right? So that's not very nice. Does that make sense? Right? And if you say that he's not one, then all these things aren't his energies. Then you're decreasing his opulence. Does that make sense? If you don't acknowledge that Krishna is everything, then that means these opulences are not Krishna. They're separate from Krishna. So that's a material conception. So it's all him. So he has unlimited opulence. So that unlimitedness is not, therefore, limiting in that he only has one quality. He has unlimited qualities, and they're all non-different from him. Right? But the difference being, then he can interact. Hmm? Oh. Oh, little boss. Sure. This is newer. Okay. Okay, Bhagavatam verse reference. Upanishads declare the Supreme Lord to be different from the Jiva, even during deep sleep, Shushupti, or at the time of liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.39. The spirit soul is born in many different species of life within the material world. Some species born of eggs. Some species are born of eggs, from eggs, some others from embryos, others from the seeds of plants and trees, and others from perspiration. But in all species of life, the prana, or vital air, remains unchanging and follows the spirit soul from one body to another. Footnote 50. In the Mundaka Upanishad 3.19, the situation of the soul in relation to prana is explained. The soul is atomic in size and can be perceived by perfect intelligence. This atomic soul is floating in the five kinds of air, prana, apana, vyana, samana, and udana. Right? Since that's what it mentioned before, it's in the airs. Because before there was a verse about situated in the airs and it meant paramatma because of the other references. But then in other verses, then it's talking about... Okay. So then here again he's talking that... So this is about the jiva. Similarly, the spirit soul is eternally the same despite its material condition of life. We have practical experience of this. When we are absorbed in deep sleep without dreaming, the material senses become inactive. And even the mind and false ego are merged into a dormant condition. But, oh, wait a minute, we were down here. The soul is situated within the heart. I was thinking, what is this? The soul is situated within the heart and it spreads its influence all over the body of the embodied living entity. When the soul is purified from the contamination of the five kinds of material air, its spiritual influence is exhibited. Right? So the air is material because it's going to do material activities. Right? So the modes of nature will get the airs to move in a particular way to accomplish the material desires we want. When we give that up, when we're purified, now they'll act within devotional service. Similarly, the spirit soul is eternally the same despite its material condition of life. We have practical experience of this. When we are absorbed in deep sleep without dreaming, the material senses become inactive, and even the mind and false ego are merged into a dormant condition. But all the senses, mind and false ego are inactive. One remembers upon waking that he, the soul, was peacefully sleeping. So one is separate from, one becomes merged, but at the same time one is able to... No. Now you have it.
Like orange.
Oh, okay.
He likes orange.
Okay. Well, he's yellow, so I guess it's the closest thing to... Okay. Okay. Subhidnote 51. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. In the waking state, the senses create a sense of change for the Atma. In dream state, the Ahankara remains endowed with impressions. In deep sleep, the senses stop functioning and identity of I, along with Ahankara, disappears. The unchanging Atma, Kutastha, remains. Why? Because it is without the covering of the subtle body, Asyam Rite, because of absence of coverings which cause change. Right? So all these things stop, but it remains. And so it's said that, or you can say, well, it's changed completely, but then when you wake up, you can say, I was sleeping peacefully. So it means it's the same jiva. It's just that at that point, the mind, the senses, the ahankar, all that stopped. So there was no identity. So then you're not doing anything. Does that make sense? But it's there in the waking and dreaming state, because there the waking state, then it's what we would call reality. And then the dreaming state is then a variation in that reality. Right? But then it goes into, then there's nothing there. Right? So they just are absorbed there with the Lord. But they're separate from the Lord because their identity remains. So the coverings cause the change. The jiva doesn't have coverings, therefore there's no change. Right? The coverings change. They're there, manifest, not manifest. But with the destruction of everything up to ahankara, a void alone remains. How does the Atma remain perceptible? We, as the witness of deep sleep, have awareness of happiness devoid of particular knowledge. I slept for that much time happily and did not know anything. Right? So there's no particular knowledge. You're not thinking about anything in particular. Right? The more you're thinking about something, the less you're sleeping. So deep sleep means you're thinking about nothing. So there is no particular knowledge. You're just existing. So then one will consider that good. That's where the concept comes. Oh, if we just go back into that like sleeping state, merge in Brahman or void, I'll be happy. You know, just like if we slept nicely, we consider we were happy. So that's their solution to the material problem, right? Rather than a positive, they just, you know, want to go to sleep. That's why we say they're in the mode of ignorance. In this statement, there's awareness of Atman, deep sleep, because of no memory of non-existence. Right? Because does that make sense? They say, I was sleeping. They didn't say, I didn't exist. But because of no relationship with physical objects, the memory is not clear. Shruti says, Yad vai tan na pashyati pashyan vai drashtavyam pashyati nahi drashtur drishter vipari lopo vidyate. When one does not see the world, one sees the Atma, which should be seen. There is no destruction of the Atma seeing.
In this, we see like now from the state of Jagriti, Swapna to Sushupti, now the active part initially is the senses, then is maybe mind or the Ahankar, then soul.
But we mention Ahankar because without the Ahankar, how will you act? Right? Because you have to have an identity to act.
So, but we take these stages as like now lower from passion to ignorance.
Yeah, but the point is what's being made here is that it's the same jiva. Because as we mentioned, then beyond deep sleep, then there's turiya, and beyond that, there's prema. So someone in prema never goes into deep sleep. Right? Once they're on that transcendental platform, there is no deep sleep. Because the deep sleep means you've merged into the Lord, though you're unaware of the Lord. That's why you just thought, I thought nothing, or I happily slept. But Turiya means now you're aware of the Lord, so you're always conscious of the Lord. Prema means you're always aware of the Lord in affection. Does that make sense? So therefore, it doesn't have those problems of ignorance.
So in the Jagriti state, we are active with the senses. So basically, when we say we are progressing ahead, means we are active as well as engaging in service rather than just be the passive state of the other states of deep sleep.
Yeah, no, those are just part of the process. But the thing is that we're active. That's what you talk about. You just say, I had a good sleep. Right? But then you do activity. The identity is connected with the activity you do, not with the sleep. Right? Unless you are what do you call it? Live in dog patch and you are a mattress tester for a occupation. Then that might be a slightly different consideration, but good chance you're not going to have that problem. Okay, that's Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.3.23, Sardarta Darshani 11.3.39. Oh, that was up there. Oh, okay. Okay, so enter. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi ki.